I would like to introduce our first speaker. That will be Janice B. from East of the River area.
Kind of close.
Say what she was sharing on. I'm sorry, I didn't say.
Oh, the title of the meeting is the topic. Yeah. What can I do? Okay. Homegirl. Okay, I'm Janice, and I'm an addict family.
Hey, Janice.
It's a good day to be clean. What can I do? You know, and when I got this topic, I kind of I said, where did I get that topic from? So I had to go back to, I had to go to the basic text and read the chapter. But for a long time, I had asked myself, what can I do? My clean date is May 23rd, 1989. And I got here just like everybody else. I hit bottom and I said, God, help me, please. And I'm so grateful that he sent me to the program on Narcotics Anonymous. And when I got here, you know, I had to ask the question, like, you know, not only what can I do, but what am I really supposed to do while I'm in here? Because when I got here, I didn't think it was possible to stay clean. I would wake up in the morning and say, okay, God, is this going to be the day? Because that was my experience. I could put a couple of days together clean, and then one day something would happen, and it would be the day. That day has yet to come, you know, and I'm so, so grateful. I got more than I bargained for when I first got here. When I got here, I stopped using and shit kind of like hit the fan. And what happened, you know, my sponsor directed me immediately to read the basic text from the inside cover. You know, and it talks about, most books have been written about the nature of addiction. This book primarily concerns itself with the nature of recovery. If you have found this book, give yourself a break, you know, and read it. You know, it talked about the symbol, and it talked about real in-depth about what and who and how and why we're here. And, you know, and I looked at my behavior real early on. You know, when I stopped using, I started eating. And when I realized that I had started eating, the less I ate, the more coffee I drank at meetings. And then when I cut back on the coffee, the more cigarettes I smoked. You know, and after a while, I got credit cards. And, you know, when I tried to stop smoking cigarettes, the more shopping I had to do. You know, and I remember calling my sponsor saying, you know, well, what can I do? Because it seemed like everything that I had tried to do would become an obsession. And I would fall victim to compulsion. You know, and I remember calling her and saying, you know, this powerlessness has gone to a whole nother level. You know, and she would just say to me, you know, the only thing you can do is not use a day at a time. You know, I had 15 years, and I decided that I was going to stop smoking. And I did like I had been taught to do. I started working the steps with that particular aspect of my disease. And I was baffled by the intimacy that my relationships with cigarettes had become. You know, cigarettes, when, you know, like, I couldn't make a decision unless I was smoking a cigarette. When I woke up in the morning, I couldn't go to the bathroom without smoking a cigarette. And one day, you know, a light bulb kind of went off and said, you know, I've been here before, this behavior about not being able to wake up in the morning and function without doing something, without putting something in me, you know, and I had heard people say over and over and over again, using is using. I don't care how you cut it. And you know, I went to be hypnotized. I went to smoking sensations. I went to like another 12-step group. And you know what? It was so true. If you want to stop using, keep using. You know, and one day I just said, you know, that's it. This is it. I had saved one last cigarette, and I had marked it in the carton that this is going to be it. And I had saved it for my home group. My home group meets on Friday at 8 o'clock. And after we meet, we used to go play cards after the meeting. And I said, this is going to be my last riding cigarette. I was going to ride from the meeting and go to this guy's house and play cards. And I got on 295, and I pulled that cigarette out, and I said a prayer, and the cigarette broke. You know, I just said, okay, God, you know, this is it, you know. And I haven't smoked since that day. Now, I had some friends come and kind of like save my life and bring me some patches and said, you know, because I didn't want to be touched. I didn't want to be talked to. I didn't want to do anything. And... you know, and I really don't know where I'm going with all of this, but today, as a result of choices that I've made, you know, and getting older, I'm kind of faced with some health things. You know, every time I go to the doctor, it's something else, you know. I got diagnosed with diabetes, and I have high blood pressure, and I have high cholesterol, and all of this other stuff, and my joints. I have arthritis in just about every joint in my body. And I went to this orthopedic surgeon a couple months ago, and you know, and he said, you know, well, you may want to start, you know, planning for your retirement, and let's start talking about, you know, getting your knees and your hips replaced by the time you retire. And I was like, no. You know, so what I've been doing is I've been looking at my relationship with food. And I've been seeing some professionals. And when I went and saw this guy, you know, he kind of brought some things to my attention that gave me a little heart palpitations. Like, try to change your attitude about food and remember that you are supposed to eat to live and not live to eat. And it was like he was from another planet. When I left, he said, you know, until the next time I see you, kind of practice just eating until you're satisfied. And I'm still looking for that. You know? And when he said it, I kind of said, you know, I don't think I have that. When I got here, y'all were doing things that I had not done and not seen in a very long time. Y'all were smiling. You were laughing. You know, people were giving hugs, and I remember thinking, you know, whatever it is they have that allows them to stay clean a day at a time, I really don't think I have it. I did not think that I had it in me. You know, and here I am still. I don't think that I have what I need. You know, and I have lived my life in a fear of scarcity and needing. I can remember growing up, and I grew up on a farm, and I always say, you know, we were we weren't real poor, but poor is poor. And we grew up, and we only had meat one day a week, Sunday. Sunday was reserved, you know, and we would have, you know, it was always a big pot of greens, a big pot of beans, a big pot of something, but it wasn't meat, let me tell you, until Sunday. And I remember being like 10 years old and thinking, when I get out of this camp and get me a job, I'm going to eat what I want to eat. I'm going to have what I want to eat, you know, when I want it. And I got just what I asked for, you know. Now, I have a deep freezer at home that has to be full to a certain level for me to be comfortable. Because I still operate from, I want to have what I need just in case. You know what I'm talking about? Living in fear one more time without using. I'm afraid, you know, a couple of months ago, one of my daughters came over and she said, you know, she needed some food. And I said, well, go down in the freezer and get what you need. Don't get too much, but get what you need. And I had forgot about it. And one day I went down there and I opened it up and it was like below the line. You know, and I mean, the panic that struck me, like, I didn't know what to, like, first of all, who robbed me? And then, like, okay, where's the sale paper? Let me see what's on sale, because it's gotta be, you know, and it's kind of like, this is what I use as a measure for me to get some peace of mind. You know, so it's become real apparent to me that one more time I'm involved in another toxic relationship. I always kind of like am picking up the phone saying, okay, so, you know, for real, God, like, what can I do about this? Because I feel so powerless. I feel so helpless. If there is something I like in the grocery store that's got a price that says I gotta come home with you, even though I don't need it, even though I don't want it, but I should have it just in case I do want it, you know? And it, you know, I'm just realizing, like, okay, so maybe you spend $100 a week at the grocery store, that might be the reason why you can't pay your other bills on time. Maybe. I'm working with a new sponsor in here. My sponsor died about 8 years ago. And I had made up my mind that I was not going to invest in another intimate relationship like that. My sponsor took my shit with her to the grave. And, you know, and I'm so grateful. But what I realized is that relationships take work. So I invested and prayed for God to help me one more time. And I met this woman and I heard her share at somebody's anniversary. And I said, okay, this is going to be the one. And I'm working with her and I'm really, really kind of getting reacclimated to allowing somebody else to get to know who exactly who I am on a very personal level. I mean, I have to pray for willingness to allow her in my life. So, you know, she's come into my life at this time and, you know, and I'm able to say, okay, you know, this is what's going on. This is what I'm dealing with. And, you know, at the same time, you know, it's, you can't work steps without having a sponsor. You know, it's kind of like impossible for me to work steps without being in some step meetings. And I need to say that, you know, for a long time I was like, I'm so tired of going to meetings. And something happens when, you know, I started going to meetings regularly, more regularly, and people start to get my number. And I'm like, okay, God. The nature of this program is about one addict helping another. And I know that nobody is put in my life by coincidence, you know, by happenstance. And what I have to remember is, you know, for real, it's about trusting that God put somebody in my life just to reflect back to me what it is in me I can't see. So I'm reinvesting in relationships one more time. And what this has allowed me to do is to make a commitment to make sure that my relationships are the healthiest relationships that they can be. In the What Can I Do chapter, it talks about the importance of a home group. And there's no home group without home group members, you know. And I find myself getting a little frustrated when I sit in meetings, because people tell me all the time, you know, that's some old timey shit and we don't do that anymore. And, you know, so I have to develop some patience and I have to remember, you know, my sponsor kind of reminded me that the home group has a responsibility to the newcomer. Because sometimes the home group is the first sponsor that a newcomer gets to have. And if I'm really about establishing and developing healthy relationships in my life, you know, I got to be about it. When I got here, I said, when I get 10 years, I'm going to have worked all the steps and it's going to be smooth sailing from then on. You know, and all I'm seeing is there's so much work yet to be done. For the newcomer, you know, if you are asking yourself, what can I do? Try just not using for today. And if we get to see tomorrow, let's just start all over again. When I celebrated my 20th anniversary, and I'm getting ready to stop, I had stopped at a store to pick up some juice to take, and I saw this guy who was in the fellowship when I got here, and he looked at me, and you know, and we hugged, and he said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "I'm doing really, really good. I'm getting ready to celebrate 20 years." And he looked at me, and he said, "I am so surprised. You were so quiet and kind of shy from everybody when you first got here. I just knew you were not going to make it." And, you know, and I remember walking back to the car and thinking, you know, like, should I be insulted? Like, what was that about? And it hit me when I was sitting in the meeting that all he did was say what I thought when I got here. Because when I got here, I didn't think I was going to make it either. And I say that to say that even if you don't believe that this is where you belong, just keep coming back. Because I did not know what was in store for me the first day that I got here either. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, sir.
All right, and at this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker, and that will be Karen B. from the Dulles Corridor. Torres, Eric, that's
yeah,
it.
You got it. Right. Hey, family, I'm Karen, and I'm an addict. Yeah. So it's good to be here today. It's good to be clean. I wish I could get up here and say I'm some kind of like big circuit speaker and I'm going to make it all sound real good and I got this thing down, but you know, that's not my story. My story is I don't really like to get up here. I don't really like to talk, but when they asked me to come and talk about home groups, I wanted to come because my home group means something to me. I go to the Tell the Truth in Reston, Virginia at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. It's an hour and a half, 5 and 10. And let me tell you, in that room, people tell it like it is. And I was never somebody who really, really kind of had a home group or never really felt a part of, and I got clean a long fucking time ago, and things were different when I got clean, and it was like you were saying, I got clean at Metropolis and Trust Clinic, and they told you to sit down and shut up, and they would tell you when to talk. Not only would they tell you when to talk, they would tell you what to say, and that was okay with me, because I really didn't have anything to say. I didn't know anything except I wanted to stop using. I wanted the pain to stop, and I had no earthly idea how to do that on my own. I went through treatment in a place called Second Genesis in Alexandria, Virginia, and I don't know if any of y'all ever went through long-term treatment, but I was there just under a year, and I wore a sign that said, "Change I must, or die I will, please confront." And you know, I didn't want them people to confront me. I just wanted to be left alone. I wanted to gain some weight so you couldn't count my ribs. I wanted the yellow glow from the hepatitis to leave my face and get a little bit of color back in my face. And I wanted to stop using. But I didn't want to deal with all that. And I remember they'd walk around, they'd say, "Assume some posture," which meant, you know, you had to sit up or you had to go sit your ass on a bench for whatever, 8 hours until they told you to get up. I think that's why I still slouch now, because I can't stand assuming no posture. But so anyways, I was in Second Genesis for almost a year, and I moved to D.C., and I went to Trust, and I went to Metropolis, and I felt at home there. You know, I never felt a part of. I never felt like I connected. But I'm from North Carolina, if you can't tell from my accent. And I shot heroin in Durham, North Carolina, because they didn't have heroin in Raleigh, so you had to drive to Durham. And when I got to the projects, I felt at home. That's where I felt like I belonged. I can't even describe the feeling to you other than I got there, and it was like, and then, of course, when I shot my dope, it was really like, but that was kind of, that's how I felt in those meetings in D.C. I felt like a part of. And, you know, when I thought about coming up here and speaking tonight, I thought, what if I bomb? You know, what if I can't, you know, get out a message, a good message of recovery? And then I realized the best part of NA, you all will love me in spite of whether I make an ass of myself or not. And that's okay. And even the better part today is I'm okay if I make an ass of myself. And I can't say that for most of my recovery. So my story goes that I lived in D.C. for about a year. I went to meetings there. I met a guy. Shockers, right, ladies? And I moved back to Virginia, and where I got clean at Second Genesis. And I started going to a meeting there Saturday night at Alexandria Hospital. And I guess it was my home group, but I never really connected to NA to like where I would say that's my home group. But I never missed it. I went every Saturday night. But I think part of it was because that's where everybody went. And we all went out to dinner and we all hung out. And that's what we did on Saturday night. So, but I never, you know, it's funny. I'm going to go a little bit off. But when you were sharing, I was thinking how more alike we are than different. Because my first sponsor, Thomasine, she died of AIDS. And man, I love that woman. And it was hard, again, to build another relationship like that. And my next sponsor wasn't the same as Thomasine. And, you know, she took my shit places. And then it got harder to build trust. And so I've never been like, you know, I see people that are so, like, N.A., like my boyfriend, he's like Mr. Friggin' N.A., and it's not me, you know, and I never did this thing right. I never got the home group. I never got, like, the sponsor. I never worked the steps the right way, but what I did was I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and I kept coming back, and 24 years later, I'm still coming back, and that's what I did, you know. And so if you're new here, I don't give a shit what you do. Keep coming back. You know, that's what'll keep you here. And so then the next, what happened? Boy meets girl. I got married because everybody else in the program got married. Not because we were the perfect couple, trust me. But that's what all of our friends in NA were doing. So we got married too. I'm here to tell you, Mac's husband is probably the nicest man I've ever met. Unfortunately, I'm not. So he was good and he was kind and you know, I was kind of a bitch and I got tired of being the bitch and him being the nice guy all the time. You know, that gets old too. And you know, you start hanging around with the same people over and over again and you know, familiarity, and y'all know what happens. You get caught up with some other stuff. And so this girl started finding this other guy attractive. And so we were all good friends. And I left my husband. He left his wife and did the drama pursuing NA. I mean, I don't know about y'all's area, but this was in Northern Virginia, and everybody's all up in everybody's business, and everybody picks sides, and guess what? Ain't nobody pick my side, let me tell you. And you know, this is what kills me, girls. It's always the girl's fault. It's never the guy's fault. You know, what was his fucking part in it? But nonetheless, I was the bad guy. So we moved away, and we started, and after we moved away, I started finding out all kinds of stuff that he had done to his ex-wife and running around on her and being abusive. And, you know, I thought, well, you know how we are, girls. I'm going to change him. He won't be like that with me. Maybe if I do this, he won't do that to me, or if I do that, he won't. Well, guess what? You know, that is not the case. And but anyways, we moved away, and I started going to a group in the Dulles Quarter area, and I never felt a part of in that group. I never felt like safe to share. And I'm not saying it's the group's fault, because I'm a firm believer in that I only get out of NA what I put into NA. I kind of believe that about everything in my life, you know, and I wasn't willing to put a lot in NA. And I had a lot of a lot of resentment and a lot of anger towards the people in the program and towards the program because everybody got involved and everybody picked sides. And, you know, I didn't think that's what we were supposed to be about. You know, I thought we were supposed to be about unconditional love. But, you know, the reality is I did some shit and people didn't like it. And, you know, there's a price to pay whether you're in the program or somewhere else. If you do some funky shit that you shouldn't be doing, there's a price to pay. And that was my price. Unfortunately for me at that time, I was self-centered as I've been most of my life throughout my addiction, throughout my recovery. And I didn't have enough awareness to know, you know what? You did some shit and now you're going to pay the price for it. And I learned that over really the past couple years. And so what happened for me was I went to that group and I left every Friday night feeling worse than I did when I got there and feeling like I'm not a part of, I don't fit in. Here I go again. I'm around another group of women who are talking about each other. And I'm going to tell you what, that is the one thing I am not good at that. I'm not good about talking about other people. I don't want to talk about nobody else. I got my own shit. I'm trying to manage a 9-year-old child, a fucked up relationship, a stressful job, and I can't be worried about what Susie's doing next door. I can't. You know, I can't even keep up with me. So what I realized, and at work they always say I'm a gay man trapped in a woman's body because I can't put up with any drama. I can't stand it. I can't stand everybody talking about each other, and I don't want to hear it. And I also like to decorate, so I think that's the other reason they say that. I'm always wanting to decorate something. But they gave me one of those little purple Teletubbies and said, "You really are, Karen, truly a gay man trapped in a woman's body." But so my story goes, I kept going to that Friday meeting, and I was in this relationship, and I'm a mental health therapist by training, and this relationship had gotten very abusive, and I didn't realize I was in an abusive relationship, and I didn't realize how to get out of that abusive relationship. And that abusive relationship was very familiar to me because that's what I knew when I was using. I was always in a relationship where I was getting my ass beat, or I was beating their ass, or, you know, while they were sleeping, knocking them over the head with some shit because they were too big. I couldn't hit them when they were awake. I mean, you know, always something. Some kind of drama, you know, too much Jack Daniels and whatever. And I didn't think I would end up in the place I ended up in recovery. You know, I didn't think I would end up there. But you know what? What goes around comes around. And the same person who had cheated on his wife and been abusive and mean to her, guess what? I didn't change him. He was doing the same behavior to me. And I didn't know what to do. And I didn't know how to get out of it. And what made me finally get help was my little girl, she's 9 years old now, would cry at night and tell me how bad she hated her father and how afraid she was of her father. And I began to realize how afraid I was to leave my daughter alone with that man. And it was her father, and I didn't want her alone with him. But at some point, I knew if I didn't get some help, I wasn't going to be able to leave that man. I could not do it on my own. And so I went to this meeting that I told y'all about to tell the truth on Sunday. And for the first time in recovery, y'all, I didn't care what people thought about me, because for 20 some years I wanted to look good up in a meeting. I wanted to wear some cute outfit. I still do want to wear some cute outfit. But I don't give a shit if I do or not, or what y'all think. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't want to still go buy a pair of earrings or something. I do, But I was frightened, and I didn't care what you thought about me. I just needed some help. And I raised my hand in that meeting, and I said, "You guys, I'm scared. I'm in a relationship with this man who's Mr. Friggin' N.A., and all y'all know him. I don't know how to leave him, and I don't know what the fuck he's doing in his life, but I got to get my daughter away from him, and I got to get away from him." I'm afraid to come to this meeting because it's 2 hours, and I don't want to leave my daughter with them for 2 hours, but I don't know what to do. And I went to that meeting, and I didn't leave, and I kept going, and I kept talking about it. And 2 years ago, in April, we were on a trip in San Francisco, and he did some fucked up behavior like he had been doing. And he got to the point where I thought, the next thing is he's going to hit me. It's not just going to be where he's calling me horrible names. It was this close to I thought he was going to hit me then. And I said, you know what? I don't know what's wrong with you. I don't know what you're doing, but I got to go. I have got to get help for myself. And getting to a point where I cared enough about myself was huge for me, because let me tell y'all, I wasn't somebody who came in these rooms feeling good about myself. I was somebody who didn't look in a mirror for years because I felt so bad about who I was and what I had done out there. So for me to stand up and say, I'm done, y'all don't know what a huge step that was for me in my life, but I did it, and because of that group. And he said, don't leave me. He said, I've been doing some shit in my life. And he said, I need help. And he said, if you give me a chance, he said, I'm going to get some help. And he said, I'm going to do some stuff different. And it wasn't a pretty process. It hadn't been a pretty process for, I don't know what, Kenny, 2 years. But I didn't leave. I gave him a chance to get help. He went into therapy. He started working with his sponsor again. And then he told me the truth. And the truth was that he had been cheating on me. He had been running around. He had been doing whatever he was doing. Because you know what? Just like Janice was saying, our addiction is going to come out if we're not doing it in whatever we do. Luckily, girls, for me, I go buy a handbag. You know, I'm not trying to run around and have sex with somebody out on the corner. Other people, it's the sex thing. And you know, what my sponsor said, and I do have, and this is another thing, I did get a sponsor that I trusted again and that I believed in again, and she said she had done the same thing to her husband. And she said, it's because he doesn't feel good about enough about himself to do something for himself. She said, I want you to give him a chance if you love him and see if he can change. And see, she was somebody who had some experience and she had some history, because she did that to her husband 15 years before. She never ran around on her husband again. She never did anything. Well, she shops too, but she but she didn't act out in that way or in other ways that we can act out. And I did the stuff she told me to do. And, you know, one of the things that she said we had to do was every night we had to get down on our knees together and we had to pray together as a couple. And I'm here to tell y'all, for 2 years, we have not ever missed a night that we hit our knees and we prayed together. And in the mornings, I don't hit my knees with him and pray, because he leaves at 5 a.m. and I'm sorry, I'm trying to get that extra hour of sleep in. But he hits his knees every night and he holds my hand and he says his prayers with me. And he's become the father that I always wanted for my daughter. And he shows up for us. You know, he goes to, he takes her to the ice skating. He takes her to gymnastics because he leaves early and can get home and pick her up. And I can't do that. And, you know, I don't know where this journey is going to lead us. There's some days where I'm still mad at him and I'm still angry that he's done the stuff he did to me. But the difference for me today is I have a home group. I have a real home group that I go to Sunday, and I raise my hand on Sunday mornings and I say, y'all, I'm not in a good place. Now, I don't know why I'm not in a good place, but I'm an addict. See, in the past week, I've been obsessing. And I've been thinking about how, you know, I wanted to go up to Baltimore and tell that bitch that was giving them blowjobs in the parking lot, da-da-da-da-da-da. But you know what? I get gut-level honest in my home group. I don't care anymore what anybody thinks about me. I care that I don't use and that I feel okay inside today. And when I leave my home group on Sunday, I don't have to act out on those thoughts. I don't have to drive up to Baltimore and say some stupid shit and get down to the level of that person. And, you know, that's not who I want to be. I want to be a woman with some integrity, and I want to be a woman who stands for something today. I went a long time where I didn't. But the other thing I want to be is a role model to the young women who come to that Sunday meeting, and I want to teach them something different than what I learned. And I want to teach them that it ain't about what you look like, girls, on Sunday. It's about coming in and saving your ass. It's about raising your hand and saying, I'm in a messed up relationship. It's about coming and saying, you know, I got some shit with some food. It's about coming in and saying, you know what, y'all? I really want that fucking handbag. And, you know, Kenny will tell me after the meeting, he'll say, well, Karen, if the worst thing you want, honey, is a pair of pink pumps, you go ahead and get them, because there's a lot worse thing you can do. That's why I love Kenny, because he don't beat me up if I break down and go buy that pair of pink pumps. You know, he supports me in it. And that's what home group members do. If I was doing something worse than buying a pink pump, Kenny or somebody else in my home group, they would tell me about myself. And that's what I love about that group, is I'm learning who I really am, not who I want you all to think I am when I stand up and pretend like I'm all this and I'm all that. That's not really who I am inside. It's really not. Because inside, you guys, I'm crying some days. And inside some days, my head don't stop. I mean, I don't know about you all, but the stuff sometimes I think of, and I think, do other people think like this? And then when I talk about it in the Sunday meeting, they say, oh, yeah, Karen, yeah, that's exactly how we think, too. And, you know, that's what I've gotten from being a part of a home group. And we went, I think it was like last week we were there, and there was a guy that came and he said, you know, I don't go to NA. He said, I go to, and this was at Burning Desire time. He said, I go to NA. And he said, I go to AA, not to NA. And he said, I got here late. And he said, I almost didn't stay. And he said, I stayed through this meeting. And he said, this is one of the best meetings I've ever been to. He said, I never heard people come in and really talk like you guys talk in this meeting. And that has been my experience of my home group. So for 2 years, I have gone there and I've shared about my pain. I've shared about my joy. I've shared about how to be a mother. I mean, you know, raising a 9-year-old who thinks she's 20 is not easy. And, you know, we went to the mall recently because, you know, I took them to this gala, her and her little friend, where it was a dress-up gala with grown-ups, and they got to buy fancy gowns to wear. And she wanted to buy a pair of high heels. I said, well, we'll get you a new pair of shoes. Well, see, my daughter picks out the glitter heels that looks like, you know, you working. You know what I mean when I say you working? Because I have had a couple of those plumps myself over the years. And I'm always trying to send a message. And I think, shit, what am I in for when that girl turns 16 if she is already looking at pumps like this? And, you know, I have to come to the rooms and I have to talk to other women who've raised children and who've been there, and they can say, you know what, Karen? Little 9-year-olds play dress up. That don't mean at 16 she's going to be wearing them pumps. So, you know, I have to hear that stuff, and I have to hear, like, how to show up for people, how to show up for the people in my life, you know, and how to text people when they're not in the meeting, and how to be an active participant. And always in the past, I never really had time for newcomers. You know, I thought, there's other people who are really good at that. I'm just not good at all that drama when everybody comes in and they're using, and I can't hear all that. So at our home group, we have a bunch of young, and to me, because I'm getting old, y'all, a bunch of young women who I have so much friggin' admiration for, those young women. And one of them used to come in and she would relapse, and she would relapse, and she would relapse. And every week I would say to her, come back next week and you're going to have 7 days. I can't wait to celebrate your 7 days. And then she'd come back the next week and she'd say, I didn't make it, Karen. She said, I didn't get 7 days. I said, that's okay. Come back next week and you're going to have 7 days. And I didn't want to miss a meeting because I didn't want her to come in and have her 7 days. And I wasn't there to say, you go, girl, you got your 7 days, you know. And the irony of this program is what that did for me was it made me come back every week, whether I wanted to or not, on Sunday. And she kept me coming every week. And I remember when she came in and she was like, Karen, I made it. I got 7 days. I can't tell y'all, I don't know about the guys, but a lot of the young women I see over the years, they struggle to stay here, man. It is hard for friggin' women to stay in NA because, well, I don't know. We all know why, but shit. But something about her and a couple other women in that group inspire me like I cannot tell you. And every week when I see them, it means so much to me. And she celebrated a year a couple months ago. And I cannot, to go to her anniversary and to see that girl get a year chip after years of not even getting 7 days, it was huge, huge, huge. And just like 2 weeks ago, she sent me a text. She's graduating from college and wants me to come to her graduation. And, you know, that's what our home group is about. And I have a busy life like you guys do. I got a busy, busy full-time job now. Because you know what? If you stay here long enough, everything you ask for in recovery, you're going to get. And then you're going to get a whole lot more. And then you're going to get a whole lot more. And then you're going to get a whole lot more. And then you go, holy shit, how am I going to manage all this stuff that now I got? And then you begin to realize, well, I've accumulated all this shit, but what's it really mean at the end of the day? And then you pray you can get back to where you were in the first year when it was all about gratitude and it was all about just staying clean another day. And it was all about being willing to help another addict. It wasn't about running to this, running to that, being this, looking cute for that. It was about feeling good inside. And it was about being okay with who you were. And it was about being able to look into the mirror and know you weren't using. And, you know, somehow when you've been here a long time, you get lost, you know, and you forget what our primary purpose is here. And you forget what's really going to keep you here and what's going to make you feel good inside. And I'm here to tell you for sure, it's not the luxury car. It's not the next pair of pink pumps. It's not the house at the beach. It's not the whatever. It's really what you begin to learn about yourself and who you become on the inside. And, you know, I don't want to be somebody who is so worried about what I look like on the outside that I'm dying on the inside. Because, you know, for me, I might not want to use a drug today, but I also sometimes feel like I don't know that I want to be here the next day. And, you know, what's that going to leave for us? You know what I mean? Like, it's a cunning, baffling disease that wants us to use again. Might not want us to use drugs. It might want us to use food. It might want us to use the mall. Whatever it is we use. But it's a vicious circle. And for me, I want the women in here to stay here. And I want the women in my home group to keep coming back. And I want to be a home group member that texts people and say, hey, I missed you this week. You weren't here. Where were you? I want people to text me and say, are you okay? You know, I don't want to be alone and isolated again. And y'all, I do that in recovery. I mean, I can get myself to a place where I've isolated myself in a room full of people. And I can make myself not feel a part of. And, you know, one of the beautiful things about conventions like this is it's a great way to, like, reconnect, you know. And it makes you feel a part of again. It makes you feel connected. And I've been asked so many times to lead workshops or to speak, and I always say, no, I don't want to do it. And, you know, over the past 2 years, I don't do that anymore. If somebody asks me to lead a meeting, I show up wherever they ask me if I can, and I lead the meeting. When they ask me if I would come here and do a workshop about home groups, I said, yes, I will absolutely be there because I love my home group, and I want to tell everybody, if y'all ever want to come to a home group, you're more welcome to come to my home group because we would love to have you. I hope everybody here has a home group. I hope you do things different than I did. But if you don't, if you don't use your sponsor like you should, I mean, I would encourage you to, because I tell you the difference for me when I started really using my sponsor 2 years ago, guess what? I got the information I needed. I got tools to not be crazy and act out and do some stupid stuff. But when I don't pick up the phone and call her, I'm going to act out, I'm going to do some stuff, and I'm going to be stupid. So if you don't, that's okay, but I'm just saying it does help if you pick up the phone and call her, or him, whichever it may be. If you don't work the steps, for me, this is just my experience, the steps for me is the way to stop the stuff in my head. If I don't write it down and get it out, either whether it's talking about it in my home group or doing some step work, it just stays there and it keeps on going. So I would suggest if you want to, that you work on your steps, I recommend coming to conventions. Because you know what? I can't tell you how good I felt here with the hug squad and everybody giving you hugs and seeing people smiling and everybody happy. And it's a good place to come and to feel good. But if you don't do anything else, if you don't do all that, that's okay. And if you do some stuff like I did where you don't necessarily feel good about yourself, it doesn't matter. Keep coming back. Keep coming to meetings. No matter what you do or you don't do, keep coming back. And I tell you what, if you stay here long enough, you're going to face some shit, and you're going to kind of wane in your path, but just keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. All right. That's it. Let's thank Janice B and Karen B for sharing. We're going to close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer.